This week, and we're sorry already, it's the Langoliers from just outside the art supply store in Salmon Point on Duma Key, right off the west coast of Florida. And oh, hi, Edgar. How you doing? Poor guy. Anyway, welcome to
the Dark Multiverse of Stephen. The Dark Multiverse of Stephen. The Dark Multiverse of.
Oh my god. It's the Dark Multiverse of Stephen King, okay?
We're going to be talking about the Langoliers. Now,
Bradley,
first off,
nope.
Whose idea was this?
That's what I was just going to ask you. Okay, did some fucked up psychotic fan or friend write us an email and suggest this? I want to know.
I believe it was you.
I'm pretty fucking sure I would never in a million years do the fucking Langoliers. What is wrong with you? I know it was you.
No, it was not me. I think it's this. I think
what
when
twisted
you,
bastard.
No, it's your fault because you gave me that DVD of all of the miniseries,
right.
That, like, you know, this one and Golden Years
right,
and all the others.
Right.
And Red
oh,
Resonance.
It was
and
the gift
that
I gave
and
you.
And I said,
right.
Oh, there. And then we talked about it and you said, yeah, let's do the Langoliers. Or I said,
yeah,
I'll give it
sure.
to you. I have no idea. Somebody said, let's do the Langoliers.
Some sick bastard said, let's do the Langoliers. That's
well,
all I know.
It was not me. I remembered it wasn't very good.
You.
I was way wrong.
It wasn't very good. It was fucking horrible.
It may be. We're going to keep a list of this. It may be
the
worst Stephen King movie adaptation around.
I think it's his worst story.
I think it's a pretty bad story, too.
I think it's his worst story.
But there have been other, like, not great stories. I frankly think Silver Bullet is not one of his best stories.
Yeah, I didn't read that.
But the movie's kind of fun when we do that one, but, you know.
Oh, my God. I don't know what happened, but I'll tell you something. Watching this movie was like an endurance through hell.
Okay, this is usually the part where we talk about how we're an all-spoiler podcast, and we assume you've read and or watched the subject, and if you're not, invite you to go off and do that now. But this time, not so much. I mean, yes, we're going to talk about the beginning, middle, and end of this whole Langoliers mess, but neither of us, in good conscience, can tell you to go off and waste your money or spend your time watching or reading this particular piece of King's work. It's just so bad. But still, if you already have, or if you're a genuine glutton for punishment, bear in mind, we figure you already know all you need to know about this novella and miniseries, and we're going to talk about it freely, very freely, from here on in. So, like they say in the Peter Pan ride at Disneyland, okay, kids, here we go. How many times did you fall asleep trying to read the novella?
At least four.
Yeah, I kept calling and telling. It's strangely semi-available. This is what's so weird about this, is that you couldn't find your copy of Four Past Midnight, which is the book. It's this first of his novella collections he did way, way back.
That's obvious.
Yeah, and so I go to our two big local bookstores, the largest independent bookstore in Southern California and one of the big chains. No copies of it, not in mass market, not
Brad
nothing.
Went everywhere. It was like, I went to this place. Are you kidding me? I'm like, we have 3 days till we need to record. And then
three
we got
for
it.
Books.
Yeah.
Then I checked with our local library online. They don't have a copy of it.
Oh, my God.
I had to go to the next community over to get the one and only copy at the library.
That's insane.
To get this. Now, yeah, you can buy ebooks online.
Right.
But it's like, or $16
well,
for the.
I found one for $47, and then you told me that you think it's probably a first edition, but I didn't see anything else that was not.
Yeah,
from
and,
just
and I have
sellers.
Since bought
it's
you Four
crazy.
Past Midnight in.
Thank you. Can I tear out the Langoliers?
But it's like $4 for the book. $4 for the, yeah, you can like mark through
can
it
I just,
pee
just,
on it,
yeah.
whatever you want.
Have my cats pee on it and then
but,
just tear it out.
But so the book is not as readily available. If you go to your Stephen King section of your local bookstore, it's not there, at least around here, Southern California, it ain't there online. And this version of it is not available for Netflix or anything else.
No.
You can't get it in that collection that we have
right.
along with others.
Yeah.
And there is a couple of real bad versions of it on YouTube where you can watch the whole thing there. Which probably is what it deserved.
Right, I think so. And you'll fall asleep during that too, because I tried watching this fucking miniseries and I kept falling asleep my husband and I watched it for 2 days and we kept falling asleep. And every single time I would wake up and turn it back on, I'd say, "Are you still with me, Billy the Kid?" And he's like, "Yes." And I'm like, "Why? Glutton for punishment."
I think for me, it was two or three times, mostly because I kept distracting myself by looking up IMDb to see what the actors were doing or whatever else had been done. So I had like two screens on the whole time because you just can't sit and watch this.
It's horrible. I was trying so hard not to do other things because I didn't realize until today while it's on right now while we're in bed.
Yeah, as usual.
That there's subtitles. I didn't even think to look. I just was like, why is it up to full volume and I can't hear what anybody's saying? Or the opposite. What happened? What did we decide? It's fucking shouty as fuck.
It is. It's so loud. The parts of it are
so loud. It was horrible. I had a panic attack. I basically was on Xanax for 2 days straight because every time I had to like ride the remote where you're like your fingers on the volume and every time it would start to get loud, I'm like jamming it down from 100 down to like, you know, 40 and then like back up to 100.
Yeah. And, you know, to go back just a little bit, what made them think that of all the Stephen King material?
That's what I was wondering.
Even in 19, whatever this was made, 1994.
That's too late. People should be wiser than that.
Well, but he had so much stuff out already. And of all the things you could option for a TV movie, why would you choose
this? The Langoliers. And why? You said something that they were going to be redoing the Langoliers?
No,
why?
No. As far as I know, Langoliers is not on the remake list.
It's done.
No, I don't know if you'll ever see it again. It's like, why? You could have chosen any of the other three novellas in Four Past Midnight and had a better chance at this. So what possessed them? But even after that,
I don't understand.
They did their best, the producers of this thing, to front load it with well-known people to make it a class operation. You got David Morse in here, who was only a couple of years out of St. Elsewhere, and who would go on, by the way, to do two more Stephen King movies. He's in The Green Mile and does an incredible job. Mm-hmm. And he's in Hearts in Atlantis.
And then,
that's David Morse, the pilot.
I said to the husband, I'm like, "Hey, husband." What I call him. "Hey, husband. Who is that guy?" And he's like, "I don't know. He's a character actor. Lots of stuff." And I'm like, "Yeah, lots of stuff. Can't think of one." He's
still
me
around.
Yeah.
He's still working. Most of these guys are still working today, except a couple are too old now. But, and again, we're talking, this is over 30 years old. Mm-hmm. It was in 1995.
Before we get into what The Langoliers is about, I just want to say one last thing. It took me so long to read it that I've been waking up every morning and trying to read it and then going, "Oh my God." And so we've been watching it the last 2 days. And before he left the house to take the dog to the groomers, the husband said, "Oh my God, it's like Stephen King just got really, really drunk and decided to start hitting himself in the dick with hammers." And then wrote this story. And so I'm like, "Oh, Brad's on his way over." And he says, "Okay, cool." "Just remember, drunk, period, dick, period, hammers, period."
Well said. I have a simpler, though not nearly as interesting, explanation. Stephen King just loves things like The Twilight Zone.
Right.
You know, and I really think that this started as just, let me do that, you know, that story called The Flight of Whatever, where they go up and they get lost in time and they see dinosaurs and they fly back to it and they come home. I'm going to do my version of that.
Right.
And
it's a much better than the Twilight Zone version.
Yeah,
but
I mean, it was
too,
bigger. And he tried to apply all his normal rules about making them real people and having good backstory and having a better ending.
That's very true.
However, none of it worked. Not in the novella.
It did not.
Not in this. And, of course, he wrote the screenplay for this, further proving that Stephen King can't write screenplays.
Oh, and also the last bad thing that I'm going to say about it. Well, probably not.
Not
even close. Sorry. This is the ripping on it episode. But is that Stephen King has never looked less hot than in this.
Than he does when
he's cameo of this. What is with that crazy mustache? It's like a weird cop mustache, but it's not thick. It's like kind of like thinned out.
And he was supposed to be a
looks like
corporate
Lloyd
guy. That he didn't look anything like the corporate guy.
He looked like Lloyd Christmas from that Jim Carrey movie, Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah.
That's what he looked like.
Yeah, it was strange.
It was very
In fact,
weird.
The mustaches in this movie in general, or really David Morris's mustaches we're looking at now, not an attractive thing on
not
David
Not the best
Morris,
mustache I've seen.
Or whatever. Nor on the British guy who plays
the hottie.
It's like we should have just skipped the whole
mid-90s
mustache thing.
You definitely don't. Nobody wants a mustache ride in this movie.
That guy who played the hot British hitman guy had just come off of 3 or 4 years of playing the bad guy in Swamp Thing, which was a very popular deal. Patricia Wedding, who's in this, was out of 30-something.
Okay.
She's still around. She did the vice president on 24 for a couple of seasons. and of course Dean Stockwell,
right,
who's been around all the way back to when I was born, and he was doing the Boy with Green Hair. He was a kid actor.
Oh,
and I he's been around ever since, and he did a number of years as Al on Quantum Leap.
Right.
That was well known, best known for that, continued to work out. So all these guys, they were like major
that's
stars.
That's what I was saying. I'm like, oh, look, it's Balky. Oh, look, it's
Balky. Obviously, Balky from Perfect Strangers.
Oh, look, it's just ended 2 years earlier. Or it's the guy from Quantum Leap, his buddy, that he's always jumping. I go, the guy that jumps from place to place.
Right.
Quantum
Leap. They front loaded this with three or four big stars from the late 80s, early 90s to try to make this thing really work. And they're all playing kind of against type and doing all this other stuff. Didn't work at all.
No, it did not work.
May be among their worst performances ever.
I think so.
As well.
I do. I don't think anybody was a good actor. Maybe the girl that's going to rehab, she was kind of a good actress. She's the most believable, anyways. I was
interestingly enough, she stopped acting right after this and just never acted again.
That was too much for her.
Actually, again, the people I mentioned have all gone on to continuing careers in work, except for Stockwell, who is past 90 now, though he's still around.
Oh.
He's like 92 or something. He's retired, but he, you know, did incredible work for 1,000 years. He continued to work a little bit longer, but he's just really old. But other than that, so he's retired.
Yeah, because he's kind of old now.
That woman just never worked again.
And
interestingly, the young woman,
she was like, "That's it. If this is all I'm going to do in my life, I got to do something else."
And the young woman, the little girl who played the blind girl,
right?
She'd actually been the lead in Francis Ford Coppola's Secret Garden that had been made a couple years earlier. She did a couple of things after this. And you just look at her IMDb and you'll see she's done a horror movie here and there ever since. But she's also done a lot of writing and producing. And she also owns the rights, apparently, and is attached to a book called The Forest of Hands and Teeth, which is
a very
good book. It's a great book, zombie post-apocalypse deal. And she's associated with that. Maybe she'll get it made someday. That's been a couple of years. But she hasn't gone on to anything great. The rest of them, I think, probably erased this from their resume.
Pretty fucking sure there's whiteout all over their fucking shit. If there's any Langoliers, anything that starts with an L, they might just kind of go through
And you know, the one that I blame most for this is not any of these guys, the screenplay certainly, but it was Tom Holland, the director. Tom Holland also directed Thinner.
Oh, so he should
also
know better.
He also wrote and I think directed Fright Night, the original good one.
Okay, yeah.
So I don't know what the hell went
what
on
happened?
Here. Yeah.
Did he lose a bet? Maybe
I
that's
don't know.
What it is.
And he made Thinner after this. I mean, it was not like...
Oh, so he learned his lesson.
I guess. We'll look at that someday relatively soon.
I guess.
But this...
look on your face. I wish you people could see this. This is so amazing. Brad never looks perplexed to this level of just, what in the hell is happening?
How can this be this bad?
It's so bad.
It's not.
I can't believe it.
Not a single character is believable.
Not one.
Not one action they take makes sense.
No. And
as much as I love Dean Stockwell, if he opens his mouth with one more explanation, I'm going to fucking cave him in.
Oh, wait, okay. So we're going to go into what the Langoliers is about.
Yeah, so anyway,
that's
the stuff on the cast. So here's the basic info on the Langoliers. As we say, it first appeared in 1990 as one of the four novellas in the Bram Stoker award-winning anthology Four Past Midnight, actually King's second novella collection after Different Seasons, no matter what I say. It was 5 years later, 1995, before it appeared as a two-part miniseries on ABC, and it was not well-received. Most felt it was long, drawn-out, badly extended Twilight Zone episode. Folks like Variety, Entertainment Weekly, and The Hollywood Reporter were unkind, to say the least. One of the best was TV Guide's reviewer, who talked about its dull script, cardboard characters, ludicrous special effects, and dishwatery cast, with, they said, quote, the sole exception of Pinchot, who rolls his eyes like an alien thespian from the planet Ham, and we can't disagree. You can buy a new copy of Four Past Midnight on Amazon for $16, plus shipping, or a used copy for about half that. The audiobook is available as well, voiced by William Dafoe, of all people, and you'd think it would be good, but really, it's not so great. He's no Michael C. Hall or Will Patton, trust me. As for the video version, you can buy a single DVD of just the miniseries for about $10 or less on Amazon, or you can get it as part of a collection of 7 dubious King achievements in a set called the Stephen King TV and Film Collection, which includes things like The Golden Years, the TV version of The Stand, Silver Bullet, Graveyard Shift, and unaccountably two real classics, The Dead Zone and Pet Sematary, and all of that for a little more than $15. In both cases, these are actual DVDs only. there currently aren't any legal streaming options available like Netflix or Amazon Prime or whatever. Not that we're suggesting you do any of this, but hey, you're a grown-up, you can make your own decisions. And the links to all this are in the show notes on the website. And we should give a shout-out to Frankie Faison, the only person of color in the cast who, of course, is the first and only one to get killed until the crazy guy and the blind girl finally get it. Faison has a long and distinguished career, including appearances in 4 different Hannibal Lecter movies, 3 of them as Barney the Orderly, and he's still out there doing the job. In fact, he appeared in 3 episodes of Grey's Anatomy this year and an episode of Hawaii Five-O. And he's been married to the same woman since 1988, so good on you, Frankie. Meanwhile, the director, Tom Holland, hasn't done a whole lot since Thinner, way back when, though he did a little-remembered series, Tom Holland's Twisted Tales, back in 2015, and he's supposed to have a new movie, something called Rock Paper Dead, coming out next year. Anyway, that's the word, Bird. Back to it.
What you just said is so true. The husband, of course, was playing Words with Friends with You. And I'm sitting there trying to pay attention because I didn't realize that there were subtitles because I'm an idiot. And the guy from Leap, what's his name? Dean? Oh. Dean Stockwell. Okay. Yeah. So Dean, he's trying to explain everything because it's elementary, dear boy, and blah, blah, blah. Dear and he's boy. Like, the only way to... It's actually in the book, too, word for word, and I just died. I was like, I want to just punch myself in the dick with a hammer. Was him saying, they're getting rid of time the best way they know how, by eating it. And he looked up from his phone, and I looked over at him, and we just fucking died laughing. I was like, this is so bad. It's horrible.
Yeah, and that is in the book. The other thing is, normally we'd like to say, here's a great Stephen King story that some director or producer or screenwriter fucked up.
Yeah.
We've said that a million already, yes, only on episode 6. We've already said that. That is not the case this time.
No.
This is not a good story.
This is not a good story.
And one of the big problems for me...
You can only do it with a buddy system like me and Brad.
...is the mystery writer character.
Right.
In that all he does is lecture. He's there the entire time to explain what's happening.
Everything. He's like the Morgan Freeman, except for not as cool or as beautiful as Morgan
and
Freeman.
And he goes on and on. And yes, the annoying dear over. Boy mm-hmm. thing is in the book
the
as
condescending.
Well.
It's exactly. I just would go... I got to a certain point because the book is 200... and fucking 46 or 47 pages. You said it'll take you less time to watch the movie or to read the book than it will to watch the movie.
Well, if you could have done it in one sitting,
and,
probably
but
so.
If I wasn't falling asleep, I had narcolepsy suddenly for the last 3 days trying to get through this, both of these. And I was just going through and I was like, at a certain point, there was like 10 or 20 pages. I'm in the bathtub and I'm like, I can't do this. And the cats are like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm just so annoyed. And I'm skimming through at this point. I'm just scanning, and I'm noticing that the dialogue is all the same. And the mm-hmm. only time
well,
that I'm
very,
stopping
it
is
very...
it's accurate.
Yeah, it's very faithful to the story.
It's very faithful to the story, yeah. Which usually doesn't happen. That's the only thing it has going for it. The only redeeming quality whatsoever.
The one time that it's faithful to the story, it's a terrible story. How does he know these things?
Yeah.
It's like, so... You
how
know,
did he even come up with them? Because you're a mystery writer? Go
yeah,
fuck
so
yourself.
Writer.
Yeah,
big deal. I'm a writer. Yeah. I'm going onto a plane. I fall asleep in the first 20 minutes on the flight, which, by the way, is functionally impossible.
Right.
I don't care how tired you are. When you get on a plane, it's barely... It's still in climb at that point. And you're
going
to
your ears are popping
asleep.
And everything and
nobody's
going crazy.
Asleep
yeah,
the first half hour. But, okay, let's just... I'm so exhausted. I fall asleep. When I wake up, mm-hmm. everybody... Exactly that. You know, you're seeing... Surgical pins and jewelry and watches.
Everybody's
and
disappeared, but their things are there. So their pacemakers, whatever was in their body, all their jewelry, anything metallic,
right.
it's
Except,
sitting in their seat.
However, and this is in the book as well, their clothing.
Right.
Why
not the buttons from their clothing?
Why not their whole clothing? True. If it's going to take away flesh, I got it.
Right.
But then you have piles of clothes.
I thought maybe it didn't take anything metal. Wherever these people went, it didn't take their
Except
metal.
Except we saw jewelry and hair.
The hair. Okay.
There were not.
Are there any clips in toupees? Maybe, because anything metal stayed in the damn plane.
But then it would have just been the clips. The hair would have gone. Right? I mean, the whole thing didn't
Yeah,
make
you're right.
Any
That's
sense.
True, just because it's attached.
It should have been clothes. In both. It should have been clothing. And I can understand. I like the surgical pins or the false
I do, too.
Teeth
That's creepy.
Whatever.
Yeah,
that
the fake
kinda,
teeth. That was
cool,
good.
But they, mm-hmm. They're not metal.
And it seems like such a great idea because you're like, ooh, this is going to be really spooky, and that draws you in. Why are people's pacemakers on seats?
And this mystery writer makes the jump from piles of crap in the chairs to, oh, time. What?
How did we get on time travel? Yeah, yes, he says, I'm a mystery writer, dear boy. I'm like, give me a fucking break. Now suddenly you're a fucking pro on then, fucking.
Let's go outside. Let's do this. Let's do that. Like, continuum. He's got it all figured out. How?
Yeah. Would how?
He have, on the amount of information that was available to him or anybody, there's not a clue that you would immediately jump to, oh, we've been displaced in time.
Exactly.
Also, displaced in the time into the or past the mm-hmm. by 15 minutes.
What? How? By
where,
their watches.
Where's a clock that says it's well, 15 minutes
here's
slow?
The weird thing. They were all checking their watches. Some people's had stopped. Some people's were still going. Some people's were on the same time. And then when they do finally decide to go to Bangor, Maine, instead of Boston, which is their original trip, they decide, right. Oh, I can't land anywhere but in Bangor, Maine. So it's so much further from LAX to go there. So it makes no sense. I don't understand. I'm going to get under the cloud
cover. I also don't think that
the only
two choices in all of Massachusetts for an L-1011 to land were... Yeah, Logan
Thank
or
you.
Banger.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, you just want to do something in your hometown, sir. Okay,
yeah, because he knows the airport.
Yes,
which,
exactly.
By the way, it was filmed in Bangor Airport.
I know.
Yeah, all those all exterior shots are actually in Bangor Airport.
So,
which doesn't look nearly big enough to hold an L-1011, by the way, but that's another question.
Or any of the cast and crew that would be doing this movie. It looks so tiny. Anyways, so they land, and then they check the stopped clocks, and for some reason, the way that the night and the day start speeding up before the Langoliers even get there... They decide that, yes, it's absolutely true. Let's drink beer. They suddenly turn into fucking Brett Kavanaugh for fucking, I like beer. Let's drink beer. I swear to God, I was like, what is going on in this?
So you're going to tell that time is wearing out reality based on carbonation.
On carbonation. So why we're drinking beer all of a sudden and then, oh, let me try this. Now, it gets even more ridiculous when they suddenly decide that like, oh, we're definitely in the past. And they look at the plane. Oh, it looks more there. It looks more real. Let's go back in the plane, bring an old beer that's flat, bring it in there.
Better.
And the carbonation will come back. It's just fucking,
the
what
rules
is happening?
The king himself made up for this whole thing, just even by king's sense, just don't make. Usually he's really good about if he creates a fake place, he makes a set of rules and you follow them.
Right.
Like the vampires in Salem's Lot or the stand. Or God knows the Dark Tower.
Well, this goes way off the rails of even anything multiverse. So we shouldn't even be discussing this, but I guess we're in a weird time warp, Brad.
Well, actually, there is one in the book. There's one tiny multiverse mention.
Oh, is there?
When that damn mystery writer at the beginning is doing whole, he postulates this whole way that they could have given us a gas to make us all go to sleep and then taken people off and left the rest of us on for that. He mentions some shady government agency like the shop.
I saw the shop, capital T, capital S.
Yeah.
I saw that.
As far as I can tell,
that's
the
only
one.
And that would
that
be to Firestarter, right?
Among many others. The shop has been mentioned in lots of books as kind of the evil CIA organization that's out there and doing lots of bad stuff to people.
Mm.
And
so it's like basically a
MKUltra would be like part of
it's part of
the
shops.
Shop.
It's right. One aspect of the shop.
And it's mentioned in a number of books. But yeah, it's mostly best known for Firestarter, but it's all over. But that's it. Two words, whole thing. Other than
crazy.
That, that's our entire multiverse connection this time around. This episode of The Dark Multiverse of Stephen King is brought to you by the Derry Museum of Arts and Crafts on Center Street, right across from the Aladdin Theater. You know, the curators of the museum were kind enough to invite Kat and me down to wander around the place just last week. And wow, it's got a little bit of everything you're not sure you ever wanted to see.
You're so right, Brad. I was amazed at the entire Duma Key series of paintings by Edgar Freemantle. The plaque said it was moved here from Florida after the island's huge storm back in 2008. So beautiful, so haunting.
And I couldn't stop looking at the Bobby Hastings painting, The Road Virus Heads North. Did you know that it was one of more than 80 paintings that Hastings did, but it's the only one he didn't burn before he,
Then there was that so strange artwork, Rose Matter, that was donated by the Rose McClinton Estate. We still don't know who painted that one.
And another local artist is featured too. Pink Stars, painted by, I don't remember her first name. James Rennie's mom over in Chester's Mill?
I don't think I saw that one.
Yeah, it's very weird. It's a picture of a boy in blue shorts and a white shirt with black stripes, standing on a hill in front of a house with a picket fence, and the nighttime sky above him is filled with pink stars.
Hmm.
No one knows what it means, but it's like it came from another world.
Sounds like it. And it's not all paintings, though, either. They've got a rare Elizabethan mirror on loan from the Samuel Claggart Museum.
And a figure of Annie Oakley from the Wax Museum at Joyland Park.
And even if it's a little politically incorrect, I loved the alcove they have off to one side where they keep that full-size statue of Chief Woodenhead. So lifelike.
Well, we had a great time, and we think you will too. We'll be back to talk more about it in the future, but in the meantime, plan on a visit of your own to the Derry Museum of Arts and Crafts on Center Street, across from the Aladdin Theater in Derry, Maine.
And thanks again to the museum for sponsoring this edition of The Dark Multiverse of Stephen King.
We do have to talk about one other part of it before we're done. The Langoliers. Oh, we wait
For the entire thing.
Yeah, wait for 4.5 hours.
Yes.
To get to see these things that
and
are crunching off.
After watching the miniseries and how bad it was, I thought, oh, I'm excited for the book to hear what it says, how it's different or how it's explained or, you know, how I can envision it. Go for it, Brad.
It's the same.
It sucks. It's exactly the same. And it's so the same. Sucks.
He calls them cannonballs. He doesn't say Pac-Man.
No.
Which is obviously what they look like.
He says one black ball, one red ball bouncing around with teeth. At least Craig Toomey, the guy that goes nuts and is screaming through the entire thing and stabs the girl for no reason and then tries to kill everybody else and sees everyone as monsters and he needs to get to this meeting so he can explode his life. Anyways, he said it was basically hair and teeth. And I was like, oh, I'm excited about this.
Now,
I want to see what this is like.
I think intentionally... But no. Non-specific descriptions, because they didn't really give, at least let you play with the idea.
Right.
It was kind of spherical, but it would be covered with hair. It might have claws. It certainly had teeth. It had, you know.
If it had little legs that run really fast.
After the first two, it seemed like they came in swarms that would be almost insectile or whatever.
Right.
So.
They're bouncing balls. There
was,
like...
Yeah, there was a possibility, at least, that it would be a really freaky, scary thing in the book because you didn't have pictures, you know?
Exactly.
They took the worst of that. Also, the interesting thing is in the book that when they scoured away part of reality, you could see non-reality underneath.
Yes.
It wasn't just black. It was something else.
In both the book and in that, it's like it basically just falls away into nothing.
You got the impression that nothing wasn't just black, that it was...
At
one point, like when they're flying
in
the air, when they escape and they're flying in the air, they look out and all he sees is a kind of an ocean of nothing and a stark white sky above it.
Right.
But in here, it's just, they just like make holes. It doesn't really go anywhere. You don't get a sense that they're ripping reality away to show the nothingness behind it. They're just...
Yeah, they're not just eating time or...
They are like Pac-Man guys. And the very first shot of them... In the mid-distance with their teeth chomping, they do look exactly like Pac-Man going across and eating up. And it never gets better. Even when they get in closer and the rotating teeth and the terrible animation.
Oh, my God, the terrible animation. I was like, oh, my God, I could have drawn it. My six-year-old nephew could do a better job drawing this than, you know, if I said draw something scary with fangs and hair, I'm pretty positive it would be better than this.
And their variable speed cracked me up, too. The whole way that Holland... choreographed the ending.
Uh-huh.
Like in the book, by the way, let's talk for a second about the blind girl, supposedly the hero of this thing. Her heroic act is to make
kill
them keep this guy alive, already brain damaged, long enough so that he can create a diversion for them, be eaten alive while they escape. That's her big heroic act.
That's her big, And she's the good guy.
She's the good guy who, you know, sacrifices herself.
And then the bad, quote-unquote bad guy is the hitman who then ends up sacrificing himself and in the book tells the girl that he's attracted to. So this is like a love story in the air
And
at 39,000 feet.
And we should make it clear that in the movie, the sexual tension between Patricia Wedding and the British hitman is completely... non-existent.
Yeah.
You didn't believe for one second that they gave a crap about it. And didn't even talk to each other until two-thirds of the way
through the thing. And then at the end, suddenly they're like making out. And I'm like, what is happening? Am I on drugs? Did someone slip some LSD in my coffee again? What day is
again?
It? Is it Tuesday already?
But the realization of the Langoliers was so awful. So unacceptable. Even compared to the book, but even at all. Why would they look at this thing and think this is any good? We should mention a little more about Bronson Pinchot.
Yes. Craig Toomey.
Yes. Now, in the book, he gradually goes nuts. He starts out just being a pain in the ass.
But we know later on why.
Yeah. Which, interestingly, is another thing. King decided, I mean, in the book, each one of these characters has their own unique reason for being on the plane.
Right.
And they're all fairly interesting ideas.
Yeah.
One woman's going off to meet
like
a man
background.
She never knew. Bethany's going off for rehab. The little girl's going to go get
new
restore
eyes.
Her eyesight. Captain is going back because his ex-wife
died.
Was killed. These are all interesting stories. And as they're revealed in the book, up till when things completely fall apart in the second half of the story, they're fairly interesting characters.
Yeah.
But you find them out a bit at a time about it, particularly the hitman. You don't know what's up with him until way into the story when he confesses.
That's what I was so confused by, and it actually was true in the book, too. You don't really learn anything about him until the end, and then he just kind of confesses everything because it's like, oh, we're going to die anyways, whatever, you know.
Yeah, but again,
well.
It was kind of anticipation because you're thinking, how does this guy know so much? How can he be so super competent?
Well,
and then, okay, makes sense.
It's interesting because when we were watching it, the husband said, consulate? No, what he just said is completely incorrect. And I go, what do you mean? And he says, that's a continuity error. And I said, maybe, unless his story of what he does for a living is bullshit. And then we find out later, because neither one of us, we're in morbid interest. He kept watching it with me. And I said, have you ever watched this far in the Langoliers? He says, I don't think anyone ever has.
I think your husband got a better grasp of this thing than either one of us. But the weird thing is that in the screenplay he wrote, they reveal all that stuff up front.
Oh.
In the very first conversation with each, you find out that this woman's going off to meet someone she's never met before. And this guy, he has this little conversation in the airport at LAX.
Right.
The hitman with this guy about what he's going to do. The pilot gets pulled off his flight and told her wife's dead, get on the deadhead. We know everything about all these guys from literally the first scenes.
Right.
So who cares? There's no revelation.
Right.
There's no discovery of them. Mm-hmm. And then some characters, like our dear friend, the mystery writer, has no arc at all.
None.
He's the same guy from the beginning to the end. His only purpose there is to explain the story as we go.
Yes.
Because King either didn't bother or didn't think to actually make it reveal logically over the course of the story. Let's just stop it cold and let this guy dumbass stories in between.
And dick slamming hammers.
Slam a few dicks. And the creatures at the end are just the crowning blow in how bad all this stuff is.
Oh, no. Sir, I have to stop you there. I have the crowning blow. And it tops your crowning blow. So let's blow this pop joint. Okay, at the end, when they're... so they come back. They're in the future now. And they have to jump out of the way, as the writer tells them, because, you know, something's about to happen. And suddenly
like he knows this.
Like he knows somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
They all reality catches up to them somehow. And all of a sudden, people appear and they're like, oh, the new people. And then in the movie, and even in the book, it's exactly the same. They start saying, oh, I want to go see some fresh air or whatever. And they start running towards the outside. And I'm like, I swear to God, if they jump and they jump
in freeze frame.
They all jump in freeze frame. So that blow tops your blow, sir.
You're absolutely right. That was exactly what I was going to say. It ends with the absolute worst possible cliche in 90s filmmaking. Yeah. It was that bad. There is nothing to recommend this.
There's nothing that we can say that would make this any... I mean, we are not pulling your leg here. This is not a prank. This is not a joke. This is we are being dead fucking serious. If you think we're joking, just go ahead and try to find a copy. Put it on or open up a damn book if you can find a copy of Four Past Midnight, or you have to go to nine different places.
It's sitting on your shelf already. Do not buy a copy just for the Langoliers.
Oh my God.
And again, we're keeping an ongoing list of our favorite and our least favorite movies.
Yes.
This one's easy. It goes at the
very bottom.
Bottom
of the card deck of the shuffle.
And the only good thing about all this is we never have to watch it again.
Oh my God, never. That's once in a lifetime. We did it. Yes.
Yeah.
Now we jump in the air and freeze frame.
Well, we can't go past that. That's too good. All right, let's talk about the Easter eggs and multiverse connections for Castle Rock Episode 5, Harvest. And by the way, I have no idea what most of the titles of these episodes mean. Harvest, I don't even know what they're talking about.
No, but it's fun when we get tipsy and try to decipher
try to work it
and figure it out. we still have no idea who or what caused those fires on Black Mountain.
That's true. Now, the actor who reams the new warden is played by Richard Schiff, who is the long-suffering speechwriter from The West Wing, and most recently he's the chief of staff on The Good Doctor.
Hmm.
There's no known King connection, but it's kind of an interesting little cameo in there.
Mm-hmm. The quote-unquote self-help video about creating your own identity after prison is weird enough given the kid's non-identity, at this point anyways, but it's also delivered by Lou Hadley. And you have to wonder if he's somehow related to Byron Hadley, the prison guard from The Shawshank Redemption who killed to keep Andy Dufresne in prison. Is it his son, his grandson, someone in his family somehow still associated to Shawshank?
Yeah, it's interesting but weird connection. Now, as Henry and Molly are leaving the kid in Molly's loft, he says that for all they know, the kid could be the Bangor Strangler, which is an obvious reference to the Castle Rock Strangler, Frank Dodd, from the Dead Zone. You know, the one who killed himself in Molly's future house.
Yeah.
That's pretty smooth there, Henry. Yeah, nice work.
That was good. And if you haven't noticed the Molly Strand Realty slogan, you can see it on her building and the for sale signs. Live like a king.
Yeah, I love that. Though this isn't exactly multiversal, when the kid is walking down the street, we hear Shirley Temple singing Animal Crackers
I mean,
in My Soup.
Really?
Did you ever notice how totally grotesque these lyrics are?
Yeah.
Swallowing animals one by one.
Exactly.
Lions and tigers are watching me. When I get hold of the big bad wolf, I'll push him under to drown. Then I bite him into a million pieces and gobble him right down. When they're inside me. It's just... It's a strange song.
It's fucked up. I had to make sure that was really Shirley Temple because my grandma in Ohio used to sing that to me when I was a kid, and I never realized how... But then again, she always would sing these crazy songs about drunken sailors, too, as lullabies. So, you know, and here we are. Okay, so a bit of interesting but not quite metaversal casting. The current sheriff of Castle Rock, who introduces Pangborn at the dedication of Pangborn Bridge, is played by James LeGros. There's no king work in his resume, but he is cult famous for playing Mike, the ice cream truck driving ass kicker in the Phantasm movies.
And at the same ceremony, we've got yet another barking dog that is the first sign of things really going wrong there. Shades of Cujo all over again.
Mm-hmm. I like that, Shades of Cujo. And now we finally get this Jackie Torrance's connection to that Jack Torrance from The Shining. He's her never-before-mentioned uncle, now long dead, who, quote-unquote, tried to murder his family with an axe. But remember, in the book, Jack did his damage with a nice, big, old-fashioned rook mallet, not an axe. And that's straight out of the movie.
Diane also mentions serial killers and psychopathic dogs as well. We never get too far away from that.
Ever.
Also, there's a mention of Juniper Hill Asylum as a good place for the kid to end up. We're going to talk more about that next episode when we actually visit the place, but it's in a lot of the multiverse stories and books.
Ruth Deaver, meanwhile in the hospital, says, "Nothing stays dead in this town," a reference to Pet Cemetery and Castle Rock in general.
And then there's that last speech that Alan Pangborn and the kid have in the forest at the end of the episode. There's a couple of important parts thing. They talk a lot about the story, but he says, "I can't remember my own dead wife's face, but I never forget yours."
Oh.
So is he referring to his first wife who died in that mysterious car accident with his son, which may or may not have been caused by Leland Gaunt prior to the beginning of Needful Things? Or is he referring to Polly, who he supposedly fell in love with during Needful Things and moved out of town with at the end? The thing is, Polly's never been mentioned, and though we know some version of Needful Things actually took place in this version, because we've seen references to it, the fire and the oddity shop and all, Polly has never been mentioned one way or the other.
I don't know, different arc, but no, not on the tower.
Maybe not
on
this level of the tower. We really can't tell.
Yeah. And then there's the 27 years thing. Pangborn establishes that the kid was captured and put into the box 27 years ago, which happens to be exactly the length of time between appearances of Pennywise, as established in the book version of it. Though they do mess with the timing in the current version of the movie. Still, using that duration in referring to a character who's being played by the same actor who's playing Pennywise, yeah. For fuck's sake.
I know. It's a little too much of a coincidence. Particularly,
yeah.
She really points out 27 years in that thing. Like,
exactly.
Okay, we got it.
I don't believe in coincidences, sir.
Anyway, those are the Easter eggs and multiverse connections for episode 5 of Castle Rock, and we'll be back next week with number 6 and more. And that's it for the Langoliers, thank God. You can get a bit more, including links to the ebooks and audiobook and miniseries DVDs on our truly miraculous show notes at www.darkmultipod.com. And as always, please join us on Twitter, where we're known as @darkmultipod, or on Instagram, where we're also known as @darkmultipod. You can also drop us a note directly at darkmultipod@gmail.com. We also announced a target for next week's episode over on Twitter and Instagram pretty much every week, so buckle up, it's going to be a bumpy ride. Oh, and remember, Stephen King's new novella, Elevation, set in Castle Rock and everything, is going to be available on October 30th, 2018, which may be long after or just before you hear this gem, who knows. But be sure to grab it and absorb it, because we'll be talking about it in depth on our very special episode of The Dark Multiverse of Stephen King on Thanksgiving week. We, for one, welcome our dark robot over. We, for two, can't wait to talk about it. Once again, our spooky and beautiful theme and bed music is used by the generous permission of Chrysanthi Tan, a brilliant musician, composer, and performer who has her very own cool website at chrysanthitan.com, as well as a thriving Patreon account. You can find out more about her by Googling Chrysanthi Tan, that's chrysanthemum with an E instead of an at the end. And really, she is amazing. I'm happy to be a patron of hers over on Patreon, and you should be too. If you want to reach out to us, just Google Brad Munson or visit my page on Amazon. As for cat, what's the opposite of a polar bear and a blizzard, a black cat and a mineshaft? That's our cat. All deep and dark and mysterious and invisible and exceptionally growly, so it's best to stay back if you don't want to get clawed. And if you like what you hear here, thanks. And you can help spread the word by going on over to iTunes, and the easiest way to do that, by the way, is bit.ly/darkmultipod. And do the usual subscribe, rate, and review thing there. We'd really appreciate it. We'll even buy you ice cream the next time we see you. And even better, you can mention The Dark Multiverse of Stephen King on your own social media, and even to your flesh and blood human friends and families and acquaintances. Every little bit helps, and it's just all so organic, you know? Next week, something new and different and positively spooky. Can't wait to get it to you. And until then, have a good one.
La 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 la. All right. I don't know why I love it when you laugh when I do that every time.
It's so stupid.
It is stupid. It's fun.